Industry Talks. Today we have Mr. Harish Mehta, one of the founders of NASSCOM and a veteran IT stalwart, who's written an interesting book called The Maverick Effect. Welcome, Mr. Mehta, to Policy Talks.
Thank you, Adesh. Yeah.
My first question, of course, to you is about the book. You know, what was the objective of writing it, and what impact does the book have now?
See, when I'm going back to 3 years, where I do buy books and read books. That time when I used to buy the books of RBI governors, IAS officers, politicians, and being involved with NASSCOM from beginning, seeing how the NASSCOM has evolved and how the IT industry has changed and how India has changed. So I'm very proud of what everyone has done in this process. However, I didn't see any of that book giving any credit to our industry from that perspective. Like I would look at the index, is the word NASSCOM there? No. Yeah. NASSCOM is, I'm surprised, NASSCOM is not even listed anywhere. Forget about the contribution of what it has done. Similarly, when you talk about how India has changed and the contribution of technology industry.
Yeah.
So there is an African proverb, Yatish, you may know, remember or know that if lions had historians, the tales of hunting would be different.
Yeah.
So here, if we have not written the story of what we have done, we need to put our stake on the ground and then let the reader decide whether the claim that we're making is right or not. So that drove me to write the book about the story of how IT industry changed. And it again, like say, Dr. Sumantra Ghosal used to say, that 1,000 years of downward spiral of India was arrested by IT industry of India. And NASSCOM was the sutradhar driving it. So that I use as a theme in my book. In terms of outcome today, fantastic response. I think I was expecting, frankly, number of challenges to come from different sources. So far, so I'm sure someday somebody would come up and raise objections to the claim that I'm making. And if not, I'd be very happy in terms of that means the effort that we all have put in. So I'm not an author. I'm not an economist. I'm not an historian. So I had to put a team together to bring in different aspects in the book. So like any economist can challenge the data and the numbers I've put in the book, because they may also be validated by another set of economists.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be fun to see if there is somebody challenges this. Okay, did we create a new middle class or not? Argument said.
Yeah.
And so, okay. Yeah. So that's it. So I'm very happy so far. Very good response.
And yet to this was very important. It had to be written. And I have been contemplating writing about my history of NASSCOM, at least since the early 90s. But maybe someday when it deserves to be written. More importantly, you know, one of the roles that NASSCOM played, one was, of course, you know, representing the industry. And it did that quite remarkably, particularly in the early 90s. When some of these technologies companies had exited India in the late 70s and early 80s, and they wanted to come back. You know, I remember IBM and some of the other companies wanted to set up a back office. What was the role that NASSCOM played in that period to allow them to come in as competitors to Indian in IT industry?
Very interesting question. See, what happened was we were providing services to this, let's say, Fortune 500. Low-end services. But we had some of best engineers deployed in doing this work. So when the customers saw the work our people were doing, were really impressed. So my God, what takes our engineer, let's say, 1 month, these guys are doing it in 1 week, and I'm not asking many questions that they understood. And I mean, phenomenal performance by our engineers. So they said, why not we do? And of course, the lower cost was very attractive. There was 15 times the labor arbitrage differential between the cost in USA and cost in India.
Yeah.
So they say, why not we ship some of our back office operations to India? Now, these are very confidential operations, basically the internal operations, which third party cannot come in and manage it. So they say it can be own 100% of these back office operations. So when the proposal came to us, we were a bit zapped. My God, what is this now? On the one side, we see the global market was about, let's say, $500 billion.
Yeah.
But what was accessible to us was only $10 billion because of so many roadblocks in the policies within India and also in the country that we want to offer our services to. So a lot of work to be done in all these areas for us. But we could see massive opportunity for us. Out of 500 billion, at least 100 billion is accessible, provided we have a pipe and we have Reserve Bank cleans up the money and allow us to set up subsidiaries. And so we have some hundreds of regulations sort of strangulating us. So we could see the huge potential for us. Now, to earn their respect and to earn their confidence, should we allow back office or not? That became a question.
Yeah.
And we were not sure, frankly, because all of us were afraid that if they come to India, they'll take away our people, best people. They'll pay double the salary. And
you're basically inviting the competition inside. No?
Exactly. So, and then we say, even our work, the work which we are doing, that they will do classified under the back office operation. So should we allow or not allow? But then on the other hand, some of us were very confident that market is so big, first of all. And we were not familiar with all the, let's say, quality processes. The MNC is way ahead of us in terms of setting infrastructure with the best practices, setting quality processes with the best practices, the HR practices are really outstanding in terms of many of us have worked in USA and we have seen that. And we're very proud of those practices, I would say. So we can learn a lot from them if they are in India.
Yeah.
And who knows, the market will expand overall in the process. But we were still not able to take a call on it. And I remember...
Interesting. Association, typically if you see that, you know, in Indian industry association have always lobbied for preventing entry of foreign companies. Here, NASSCOM was doing the reverse, you know?
Exactly. I don't know how it happened. At that point, somebody, I don't know who that individual is, made a remark saying, whoever develops human capital of India is us.
Yeah.
And even an Indian company who doesn't develop the human capital of India is not us. Because our primary focus was overall, if you put it, is to continually develop the human capital of India. So that clinched NASSCOM. So we talked to Mr. Kohli, we talked to Azim, we talked to Murthy, all the existing players. Do you have any serious objection? And everyone supported, frankly, after all the 1 year of debate. And then we approached Dr. Manmohan Singh at that time saying, we will recommend allow 100% ownership. And then, of course, there the bureaucrats were very unhappy. Again, like an East India company entered India, we are allowing MNCs to come to India and take away X, whatever, whatever. Even somebody even said, "Tum kiske dalal ho?" So all that happened. But finally they saw, because we were ready with data facts, what kind of potential exists for our business. And they agreed. And that's how that they were allowed to come in. And today that business is, we have 1,800 R&D centers in India, 100% owned, employing more than 1.1 million people. And today many of them are now doing very high-end work of co-creating future with their parent companies. So it's a great symbiotic, I would say, between MNCs and the Indian companies. They gain, we gain. Both of us are growing in the process.
Yeah. So it is very rarely that industry associations, you know, move out of their so-called industrial sector and start looking at the larger interest. Especially here, you were looking at the larger interest of developing human capital. That if people get trained, overall quality will improve. Every company, both Indian and MNC-owned, captive sector will benefit. But this outlook doesn't happen often. And why is that? It happened at that point in time, but it is no longer happening now. You know, again, it has changed back to sectoral focuses.
No, but even later on, also, I think in 2000, when the Satyam crisis happened.
Yeah.
Okay, another example where industry looked at it much beyond. Because when Satyam, that Raju's letter came out, So Mittal had a meeting with CEOs of NASSCOM, top 25, 30, and said, what do we do? Should we save Satyam or not? So most of us said, by and large, no, why should we save Satyam? It's an individual company. It's their shareholders, auditors, board of directors, their job to worry about, not NASSCOM. But when we started discussing and debating, we realized it is not saving Satyam. It is Satyam has customers who has millions of other customers, like bank. Bank will have other millions of customers. Or they had a telecom company as a customer who had millions of customers. If Satyam goes under, these millions of customers will be on the road. And that will hit India Inc. brand badly. We all of us will lose business. Nobody would like to do business in India then. Okay, what kind of country is this? They're allowing this kind of services, so-called mission critical, to fail. So we said, no, we must save Satyam. And then Soam went back to, called Corporate Affairs Minister, Mr. Gupta. And he said, we would like to proposal to give to you. So that time we called other ministers and he said, we should save Satyam. So again, they had a similar reaction. Why should we try to save Satyam?
Yeah.
But they also saw the value. Then they say, after 2 days, they talked to the PM and others, came back to such us and saying that, yes, we would like to save Satyam, but however, for us to take over, it will take 3 to 4 weeks. They talked to SEBI, Mr. Bhave, who was there at that time. Okay, what will it take for us to do? So there's certain changes to be done, cabinet had to approve, and it takes a process that has to be gone through. So you have to figure out a way to keep Satyam alive for a month. So he came back, Soam came back to all of us and said, what do we do? So in that debate and discussion, we said, finally, we agreed on saying that none of us will proactively recruit senior manager from Satyam for 30 days. And none of us will proactively go after Satyam's customer for the next 30 days. I know one of us, what nonsense you guys are talking. This is a golden opportunity for me to double my sales now. I know some of these customers and I would like to grab them. But anyway, we don't know what happened in reality, in the real life. But for 1 month, the Satyam was sort of in a sense, continued running. Of course, many people put in a lot of effort. And then the government took over and Kiran Karnik was selected to take over as a chairman of the Satyam. And of course, Deepak Parekh, Mr. Damodaran, they were all roped in as a directors. And they had to have put in a lot of effort to save Satyam. And that's how nowhere in the world industry has come forward and saved the company. So that's again a unique characteristic of our industry.
Yeah, it was a unique moment also that, you know, a company was saved by the intervention of the industry. Now, the same situation exists in startups now. You know, there is a lot of startups are firing people. A lot of startups, by their very nature, it is expected that startups will fail. And there is a funding winter, as they say, which is coming. Funding is getting squeezed. And the whole environment is becoming tighter. And it is likely that a lot of startups will shut down because of lack of funding, not because of their business model being down. Second is that there is always this cloud of corporate governance, which is rising more and more frequently on startups. And there is no association which represents the interest of startups. I mean, like there are organizations like the Indus Entrepreneur, and there are other places where they can raise funding. But there is no organization like NASSCOM which could maybe offer a safety net to the employees or set up some kind of best practices for corporate governance, which seems to be a cause of concern now. What is your view on this?
First of all, they should read my book.
Yes.
So that will hopefully give them what happened historically. By coming together and collaborating and competing and keeping India first as a strategy, how you can minimize the damage that you just referred to, how you can save a number of things. We just talked about two case studies in that sense. So they need, unfortunately, the startups have grown without any umbrella in that sense. So even like one government officer told me, okay, they are like Rajput warriors. They're fighting amongst each other. And nobody is benefiting, frankly, in the process. So there is desperately a need for a group of people to come together who are highly respected in the startup world and come up with certain processes and ways of doing things. Let's say in at NASSCOM, we had appointed a committee under Narayan Murthy for coming up with a code of ethics that industry should follow. And that meant then we had, it was voluntary. It was not compulsory for NASSCOM members to follow, but it was voluntary. But at least we gave them the document and the guideline and the examples for them to see, they, you must follow. Then this is how the industry can change. So startups need to come up with many such, I would say, interventions to bring them together under one umbrella. It's absolutely must. If they bring the umbrella together, the first thing I would do is define the vision.
Yeah.
What is the vision for the startup as an industry? So if you don't know which direction are you moving, you're just looking at your own narrow perspective and building on it. I want that same creativity of a startup to change the world in the through the company, apply at least 10% of that creativity at industry level. Okay, how do you change the industry at a world level? And will we change the world? And those ideas are what are needed. Again, going back to our example of who is human capital, who is us? Okay, the basic question. These kind of questions should come up among themselves. And I'm sure they will find answers. They are not impossible. There's no rocket science behind it. It is just that people will come sit together and thresh it out and come up with those, reference points to go after and carry everyone. Yes, we will need person like Devang to evangelize it. It will not happen without that.
Yeah.
All that has to happen.
Yeah. And people like, I think, Sridhar Vembu and all, they should lead this initiative. I'm sure he'll find a Devang Mehta to evangelize it. And then he'll find a Harish Mehta also there who would put or stitch together the various constituents and appease the different egos that exist, you know, because to bring about the association, I think the fundamental role that you played was basically bringing people bigger than a lot of bigger people together and making them focus on the larger interest, you know. I mean, a Narayan Murthy sitting with a Azim Premji on the same table and thinking not about their own individual companies, but thinking about the country. So I think that was what was different about NASSCOM, at least in the first two decades of its existence.
You may give me some credit. That's one part of it. But I'll tell you, say, when we started NASSCOM, and again, it was not a rocket science. We said, okay, we must represent 80% of the top line of the industry. Simple thing. Then you will not have multiple voices in public. You know, one group pulling one leg, another group pulling another leg. Bureaucrat is confused. And then whoever has the muscle power or other powers would win and their policy would get adopted, which we had seen before with other associations.
Yeah.
So we didn't want that. So we said we want 80% of the top line to be represented by us. And Tata Group had 70% of the market share. And out of Tata Group, like I said, few Tata companies agreed to join, but we had to carry TCS also, Mr. Kohli also.
Yeah, I remember Kohli was still not convinced. Yeah.
Correct, he was not convinced, but we were very clear we will not start till Mr. Kohli joined. Because who are we? Then we're a city level association. This is not a national level association. We don't represent the 80% top line.
Yeah.
It is, you can say, Mr. Kohli agreeing to join a startup in a way.
Yeah.
Once he joined and he is present in a meeting, automatically 70% of the weight he represents, automatically everybody else starts thinking how he is thinking. And, you know, so all that helped to bring that, you can say, collaborate and compete. And when we allowed, let's say, MNCs to come in, they were so happy that here in the association, they allowed us to enter the country. So they also started participating. Another interesting story, which again startup world should know, is that China wanted to compete with India.
Yeah.
Also become a global leader.
Yeah.
So they ask foresters to come up with a master plan to compete with, not only compete, but to build their own tech services industry. And John McCarthy, he told us this story. Now, whether it's a real thing, not, I don't know, but he told us, and we like it. And he said, that he told them very clearly, you cannot compete with India till you create NASSCOM equivalent association. He said, I've never seen in the world IBM, Accenture, TCS, Wipro, all fiercely competitive companies sitting together across a table and keeping India first and solving the issues of the industry. You need to replicate that model. Now, just imagine the impact of assuming this part truth in what John is saying, that China didn't enter the game in a big way. Now, if startups have an equivalent association like NASSCOM.
But do you think, Harish Bhai, startups think India first at this moment?
They don't. Now. But there's nothing wrong. But they've been not told. I mean, they've not been mentored that way.
Yeah.
So right now, they've been mentored to valuation as a focus.
Yeah.
Because they're driven by that. Not even value-based. I mean, what we call it.
Yes.
So
valuation-based.
That also has to change. I mean, all that. And so if that's the environment they are in, angels and the VCs and the other community, the press, media, they all talk about unicorn and valuation as a big thing. Naturally, they also tempted or become, that's the way to go about. There has to be a counterforce to explain what, when, how. And we may not even know. You have to learn over the time. Like we didn't know, for example, when we went to Israel, we said, we are very impressed by your startup world. Because their market cap was as much as our market cap at that time. And the chief scientific officer of Israel said exactly the opposite. We are impressed by you guys. So we said, what have we done? He said, you guys have built global companies. Not a single Israeli company has built a global company. You please teach us how to build a global company. Our Israelis see the valuation, they exit.
Yeah.
But that is not healthy for the country.
Yeah.
So... but you learn, we didn't know this, for example, as our major strength till someone told us from outside. Maybe for others knew it, but at least I didn't know, for example. So startups they will learn. I mean, they're very smart. They are so, I mean, I see them very fearless, imaginative, very enthusiastic entrepreneurs. It just then requires that spark to change the direction a bit.
Another thing, you know, during my interaction with NASSCOM and the industry, one factor which was different for NASSCOM was with the government was NASSCOM built up a fair degree of trust, both with the politician and with the bureaucrat. Now we've seen that, you know, typically the policymaker is distrustful of the industry in a sense that, you know, they look at the industry as somebody to be controlled, managed, or used for squeezing tax out of, you know. While from the starting period, NASSCOM was able to create the trust. Was it Devang who managed to break that barrier of trust and distrust, or was it something else?
I think number of factors, Frank. No, Devang definitely was the leader of NASSCOM or the face of NASSCOM. Yeah. So no question, he was the front doing it, managing it. But behind him, we all supported him. For example, we decided that we'll allow all our meetings, any bureaucrat from anywhere can come and attend without invitation. And the bureaucrat was without any invitation because their experiences, others were completely different. And we had seen the trust deficit between the bureaucrats and us. So we said, come and attend. Even Mr. Mittal, when he came in, he said, give me three things to work on out of 100 regulations to be worked. And we said, no, you consult us before you make change anywhere in software. Then only we'll talk to you about the three things to be done. So that time also some officers said, why should we listen to private sector? Mr. Mittal said, well, they are saying they will only recommend. They are not saying you accept. Final decision is still yours. Your right is no one is taking it away. But at least you learn from them what they are doing. We don't understand technology that well. Why don't you learn from them also? It's good for us. But that single decision of getting Mr. Mittal to accept paid a huge dividend. Yeah. For example, government wanted us to focus on software product game. We believe the focus should be on software services. Now, it was a major difference
Yeah.
But anyway, so but we came up with the reasons and how to do it, and that started building trust between the bureaucrats and us. See, all of our offices were open for bureaucrats to come and enter, and everybody. So they'll come and then we show them all kinds of these regulations, how they were hurting our growth and creating a lot of issues.
Tell me another thing. You know,
And Devang was outstanding. You talked about political. I remember for the Copyright Act, he gave presentations to every political party. If there were 15 political parties, he gave presentations to 15 political parties on the Copyright Act. So when the Copyright Act came to Sabha, it just went through smoothly.
I don't know whether you remember Roti, Kapda and Bandwidth slogan.
That's another one.
I mean, he had a very interesting knack of capturing a problem into a political slogan. You know, typically something that politicians do very well.
Yeah.
It's really that, you know, you have a president or of an industry association doing what the politicians do. But, you know, now there is an interesting change and shift which is happening in the landscape. You know, a lot of policy change is not coming out of NASSCOM or coming out of associations anymore. It is coming even in the technology space. You know, we have what we call as digital public goods. And these digital public goods are coming out of, you know, one organization, and they're being adopted by the government across sectors, you know. And this is having a far greater impact, not only on India, but also globally, you know. So why is NASSCOM not doing this part of the work? You know, why is NASSCOM behind in this?
I don't think it is, frankly, our cup of tea to drive that. We are not the... See, this is, again, if you look to get, say, Iceberg, Nandan, and others who get involved and come up with these ideas. And it is only the young people, bright people, who would come up with these ideas and do it. It is their job, really, to do it.
So, is NASSCOM become old now?
No, the other way around, actually. We provide the umbrella support. Just to give an example, Nandan was as a Congress, representing Congress and competing with Anand Krishnan of BJP.
Yeah.
Now, 2014, I believe, elections. Now, suddenly, Anand Krishnan from BJP started attacking Aadhaar. So when we saw it, we said, my God, this is stupid. I mean, it's not right. So we, at an ASCOM, we had a meeting together and we said, let us talk to whoever knows a BJP politician. Let's talk to them and tell them, let the fight be between BJP and Congress. But don't hurt Aadhaar, which is a technology piece, which is a solid work done. And don't use that as your weapon against each other. We all, like I talked to Mr. Piyush Goyal at that time. Please don't do this. You have elections, we're winning all one part, but this is the India's need. It is something we don't want to hurt. And like that, every one of us talked to whoever knew in the BJP. Then we had Ganesh Natarajan, Kiran Karnik, I think when Murthy, they all wrote articles in the newspapers saying, keep Aadhaar away. So we provide that umbrella support. So we are fully 100% behind what they do. I mean, there's no question of, but, and we don't care where the idea is emerging. As long as it's helping development of India, we'll go all out and support. Doesn't have to be from our stable. I don't think it is true. I mean, again, who is NASSCOM? It doesn't own by anybody. So it is still part of, let's say government owns it, say public owns it in some way. So it doesn't matter.
But I mean, like, it's also question of leadership. I mean, like thought leadership. Okay, there are intransigent problems which, you know, still ails the country, and some of those problems have technology solution. You know, like Aadhaar solved an identity problem or identity problem with the technology stack. So there are other issues, like there is a healthcare problem of administrations of hospital, of CHC, PHC. NASSCOM could have played in those areas also, where Iceberg or Nandan is not playing a role. In the larger, again, going by the premise that NASSCOM is interested in putting India first and is still capable of leadership, or at least thought leadership, you know.
I don't agree. By the way, first of all, I'm not here to represent NASCOM.
Okay. So I'm the founder of NASCOM.
I'm here as an author of Maverick Effect talking to you. Because we should have Devjanis of the world to come and answer your these questions. But I see a lot of action, a lot of activity happening within NASCOM. And a lot of work is happening. It may not be visible, but that's okay. That's part of the process.
So over the last final question, no more NASCOM. Over the last three odd decades, you know, what is the change you've seen while dealing with policymakers or with people concerned with technology making policy? Is there any difference in the way they look at technologists and assertion, or is it the same?
No, it has changed. In many areas, it has changed dramatically, in a sense that in the beginning, our challenge was, how do you increase the pie from $10 billion to 50, 100, 200? So that was the objective behind the policy-making processes, to see that they become remove the friction in doing business, and which involved 18 different departments to work with. Over the time, industry was $50 million. Now we are $200 billion.
Yeah.
Of course, the challenges are different. Now, like today, if you see the digitalization, the way it has changed the world, it's like a hockey curve also would look flat.
Yes.
I mean, phenomenal change has taken place now. Now, it has opened a massive opportunity for industry. Mm. Now, we have not seen this kind of demand before, ever. Now, our challenge is, how do we take this, our natural strength, convert this competitive advantage into a sustainable advantage?
Yeah.
How do we economize the ecosystem synergies? How do we push the innovation boundaries? So these are the challenges in front of us today.
Is policy helping you in any of those areas?
We don't need the policy. It is more, frankly, internal, in terms of the companies have to fend for themselves and drive it. We can only act as a funnel, or as a, what do you call, create awareness about and what the opportunities are. And wherever we find the plugs, we'll plug that in. Like if you see when it happened, the lockdown came.
Yeah.
Suddenly we had to ship 3 million laptops from offices to home.
Yeah.
ESCOM moved quickly. Got it declared as an essential service. The circular went to some 600 district collectors, 300 plus districts where we operate. And each district collector had his own way of interpreting the central. And then we worked with we had something like, 180 volunteers out. And within 1 week, this 3 million laptops were shifted to home.
It's the largest shift in the history of mankind.
Absolutely. So NASCOM jumped in where it had to be done at a policy level to work both policy change as well as the implementation of it. Mm. So it happened that way. Mm. So, but you can say, okay, right now more is about ease of doing business and different points, transfer pricing will have some small issue, or SEZ will have some issue, or like that, such issues will come up, which we keep working on a day-to-day basis. But ease of doing business overall is one major focus.
Major.
And of course, aligning ourselves with global regulations, tax-wise, and aligning ourselves with the global data, for example, all that. So that is the process we are working on right now.
Wonderful. Thank you, Harish Bhai. That was quite an interesting and enlightening conversation.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, this, yeah.